Many aspects of the Bitcoin mining industry are poorly understood and often misrepresented. But one practice in this sector stands apart for the misunderstandings and underappreciation that surround it: intermittent mining. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we have got a great short little read today, just kind of breaking down the overall concept of the symbiosis between energy producers and Bitcoin miners, and kind of answering more explicitly or more directly this continuously misunderstood relationship and reasons why intermittent Bitcoin mining is actually not only sustainable, but it's actually a huge benefit to the electrical grid and to some of the major challenges that electric grids have in general. This one's by Zach Vohl, and just a really good little piece that just kind of hits that concept pretty succinctly. So before we get into it, I just want to say a quick thank you to our amazing sponsors, to Swan Bitcoin, the best Bitcoin onboarding experience out there, Pure Signal, simplest place to buy, simplest place to set up long-term plans and get it to cold storage, set it up once and forget it. And what do you do with your cold storage? You want a cold card, you want a CoinKite device, you want Tap Signer, you want a good, solid Bitcoin-only hardware wallet, and CoinKite has everything you need. And the last thing you want to do is fix how you use fiat by using Fold. You want to use the Fold debit card that gets you sats back on freaking everything. There is nothing better than watching your bills go through and pulling 150,000 sats for free just with sats back on normal purchases that you do all the time. And you get a 20% discount on the premium card by going to guyswan.com/fold and use code Bitcoin Audible. Bitcoin Audible, use that code everywhere. You'll just find out that you have discounts. Pacific Bitcoin Conference, discounts. It's literally digital gold. Remember, Bitcoin Audible, all one word, you get discounts almost everywhere. It'll save you sats. All right. With that, don't forget to check them all out in the show notes. But let's go ahead and get into today's excellent article from BitcoinMagazine.com, and it's titled, "The Continual Power of Intermittent Bitcoin Mining," by Zach Vohl. Bitcoin mining operations are finding profitable ways to power up and down intermittently to match their energy sources. Many aspects of the Bitcoin mining industry are poorly understood and often misrepresented. But one practice in this sector stands apart for the misunderstandings and underappreciation that surround it: intermittent mining. While most miners aim to achieve as much uptime as technically feasible, meaning their machines are online and hashing instead of offline or powered down, some miners don't. Instead of continuously mining, their uptime is far below industry norms and operates on more complex schedules built around variables like power supply and demand, time of day, intraday profitability, and even temperature. This article aims to give a brief but detailed overview of the economics and general operations of intermittent miners, and it highlights some discourse that shows how and why this part of the sector is often misunderstood. What is intermittent Bitcoin mining? This type of mining activity is often associated with renewable energy sources, i.e. wind and solar, since these types of power are also generated intermittently. Wind doesn't blow all the time, and the sun won't provide as much power on cloudy days. Renewable power is categorically intermittent, but Bitcoin miners can easily adapt to the fluctuations in these power generation schedules, unlike most other energy consumers. Lancium is one example of a mining company building intermittent mining farms. Compute North is another example. In fact, under normal operating conditions, meaning without the balancing effect from miners demanding renewable power, these intermittent energy sources can create unnecessary stress on the electrical grids. The demand from miners, as discussed in more detail later, can serve to create a floor price for renewable energy generation projects, making them more attractive as infrastructure investments. Improving the economics of renewable power sources isn't the only use case for intermittent mining, but it is one of the most commonly discussed. Demand response programs that provide interruptible power sources to miners can be fueled by coal, natural gas, or any other common fuel used to generate electricity. But to remain specifically focused on renewables, for example's sake, when Bitcoin mining operations are paired with an intermittent renewable source of energy, both teams win. Intermittent Bitcoin mining misunderstandings. A recent spate of somewhat negative commentary on intermittent mining came from Twitter posts written by several prominent proof-of-stake consensus advocates, including Ethereum co-founder Vitalik Buterin. Martin Kerpelman, CEO of the decentralized trading protocol Gnosis, told his 33,000 Twitter followers that the idea of intermittent mining helping develop more renewable energy sources requires, quote, mental gymnastics. Buterin hopped in the tweet's replies to say, I never understood how this concept of switching miners on and off frequently makes any sense at all. The end of the tweet betrays that apparently Buterin hasn't considered the issue closely enough. He wrote, quote, if you're paying for hardware but only using it half the time, in a competitive market you'll be running at a loss. And these tweets are not exceptions. Alex DeVries, aka Digiconomist, a longtime irrational mining critic, former Dogecoin promoter and an ex-employee of the Dutch Central Bank, has argued, without much supporting evidence, that, quote, Bitcoin mining and renewables make for the worst match. Multiple Bitcoin advocates and actual miners have attempted to clarify and correct the ideas behind intermittent mining strategies for Buterin and Kerpelman. Mining, quote, increases the elasticity of demand for electricity, explained HODL Ranch CTO Jesse Pelton. Cryptocurrency research and developer Noah Rutterman also countered Buterin's misunderstanding, quote, mining monetizes energy that nobody wants. Much of that energy is renewable. It's just an energy subsidy, Rutterman wrote. Intermittent mining is, in fact, widely praised across most of the Bitcoin industry. For example, Gideon Powell, CEO of Chola Petroleum, wrote that, quote, renewable energy's intermittent nature pairs beautifully with Bitcoin mining flexible load, end quote. And Mike Collier, CEO of Foundry, described Bitcoin mining as one of the most important innovations for the electrical grid in over 100 years. What innovation exactly? Quote, a large base load that is intermittent, Collier wrote. The, quote, most obvious use case for Bitcoin mining, according to Max Gagliardi, co-founder of Ancova Energy, is being paired with intermittent energy resources. To the potential surprise of some critics, intermittent or interruptible mining services can sometimes be more profitable than continuous mining. A mining analyst at Galaxy Digital, for example, noted the case study of Riot's Texas mining facilities in July. By selling power back to the grid instead of mining with it itself, it netted 30% more revenue over that period of time. And with that in mind, the next section takes a deeper look at intermittent mining economics. Economic considerations for intermittent Bitcoin mining. One of the most important ways that interruptible mining operations are seeking a competitive edge in the current market is with increasingly sophisticated power purchasing agreements, or PPAs. And when dealing with inconsistent power sources, miners need to develop customized strategies for determining how much power they can use, when that power is available, and what type and generation of mining hardware and firmware they'll energize with that power. Hardware lifespans are also a consideration, since repeatedly shutting off and turning on hardware can limit its long-term utility. According to analysis from Brains, even if miners aren't running the machines at full capacity, minimal hashing to prevent fully powering down can be a winning strategy. Quote, Miners participating in load balancing programs and those using intermittent energy sources can help preserve their hardware by keeping it running in all but the most extreme peak demand scenarios, a blog post from the mining company suggests. Where is this need for intermittent mining as an industry subsidy seen in the real world? California is seeing the economic case for building more solar supply significantly undermined when prices drop and excess supply has no buyer. Bitcoin miners, power buyers of last resort, could easily mitigate these problems. The future of intermittent Bitcoin mining. Interruptible mining strategies will certainly become more dominant as the number of farms with 99% uptime or higher begin to represent a slightly smaller share of the industry. This will happen as pure-play mining companies negotiate lucrative PPAs with generation companies. More importantly, intermittent mining will come to the industry's fore as power companies themselves build mining teams to either improve or salvage the economics of their power generation plans. Either way, the future of Bitcoin mining is bright. This is a guest post by Zach Vole. Opinions expressed are entirely their own, do not necessarily reflect those of BTC Incorporated or Bitcoin Magazine. All right. Great little piece that just kind of clears up a misconception about interruptible mining services or mining facilities or mining setups, and particularly with, because I read the thread that he was talking about or the conversations that he links to in this on Twitter, and I was just like, holy crap, I can't believe, I mean, they're proof of stake supporters, so to, in a sense, it's, you know, it's, if your paycheck depends on not understanding, then you're definitely not going to understand. But I want to talk just a little bit about some ideas around this. But first, let's take a quick break for our sponsor. For everybody new to this show, everybody new to Bitcoin who's just kind of trying to learn and constantly asks me where to buy Bitcoin, Swan Bitcoin. Swan Bitcoin. Just go to Swan Bitcoin. Go to Swan Bitcoin to learn about it. You'll see some of my stuff up there. You'll see the Bitcoin canon, like the What is Bitcoin. Go to their blog. Their blog is amazing. Go there to set up a automatic, easy to use, like dirt simple, it doesn't get fewer steps than this, Bitcoin savings plan. It is low cost. It's great for if you're stacking thousands, tens of thousands of dollars, or if you're just trying to buy $20 a week, like numerous people in my family. It's just the easiest solution, and you can automatically send it to your cold storage. You set it up once, and it just runs. And then you want to go next level, you want to get concierge service, you want help with your hardware wallets, you want help with your 401k, your business account, a trust, your retirements, like all of it. They have Swan Private that gets you the best service and access to literally the best team in the space to answer all of your questions and stay up to date with everything happening in the space. Swan Bitcoin is just the best place to do it all. Check it out at swanbitcoin.com/guy. Let's get back in. So one of the things I wanted to highlight with this piece, which I don't think I've read anything from Zach on this, or on the show before, but I follow Zach. I don't know how much writing he actually does. It might just be that I've somehow missed a lot of it. But he's a really good follow on Twitter. I'll link to his Twitter account so you can check it out. But one of the things I wanted to point out, and I saved a quote. Where are you at? Okay, so beginning of the second to last section, it says, one of the most important ways that interruptible mining operations are seeking a competitive edge in the current market is with increasingly sophisticated power purchasing agreements, or PPAs. And when dealing with inconsistent power sources, miners need to develop customized strategies for determining how much power they can use, when that power is available, and what type and generation of mining hardware and firmware they'll energize with that power. So the thing that's interesting about how intermittent mining is monetized is that as a buyer of last resort and as a use of energy specifically that does not have an explicit time demand, in the sense that there is no explicit time in which Bitcoin mining is good to do and it's bad to do, like over the time of day. Like the customer is always present, right? Bitcoin doesn't care whether you're mining in Antarctica, or if you're mining at 10 o'clock in the morning or at midnight or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, it's just all totally irrelevant. If you can produce hashes, you can mine for the Bitcoin network. And it's simply ever present. It's not like Netflix. You know, you can't just produce lots of streaming bandwidth at noon and then turn it all off at 8 o'clock and think that you're going to run a streaming service, because you're basically producing all of the bandwidth when there is no customer and turning it off when all of your customers are there. I mean, it takes, you know, 2 days before all of the subscribers would just be gone. And, you know, to give the proof of stakers the benefit of the doubt, I guess just common ignorance, or just like the basic thinking in the face of a total lack of any information about the actual market, would make you think that it doesn't make sense to cut your miners off, because there's a pretty significant sunk cost up front, and you want them, and typically a miner doesn't have a super long lifespan, just because of the constant, you know, forward march of the ASIC industry. But with time, though, it seems that, I mean, miners continue to survive much, much longer than they, particularly than they did earlier on in the industry, when we're talking about FPGAs and the first few generations of ASICs. Because still S9s are on the market. And I guess it would be just depending on kind of the energy source and the relevant cost of energy there. But with the lifespans expanding, but more importantly, is with the agreement with the energy producer. So the PPAs are what I wanted to point out with this, and what I think is such an interesting concept for someone who can buy energy at any time. Like, again, there's no temporal requirement for when you should be mining. Is that if you can buy the energy, if you're a buyer of last resort for energy when it's worth $0 to the energy producer, great example. The reason this works so great with solar and wind is because they produce energy when irrelevant to the customer. Like, it just, you know, the wind will blow and it doesn't give a shit if anybody's watching Netflix right now or needs to heat their home. And same with the sun shining. In fact, the sun is often shining and the wind is often blowing at low points in the energy grid demand for energy. So how do you make up that cost difference? How do you make up that margin? Is you sell it at a massively discounted rate to miners. Miners who can then make, I mean, I think the example that he mentioned, and there's a couple of great reads, which we only read, I believe, the first part of. I started the second part. I need to actually go back to that. On the Brains blog that has, like, really gone deeper into this, into the specifics, is that they can make an outsized margin, an outsized profit against the typical miner by specifically offering to cut off at a different time. They have an agreement with the energy producer to basically make it the most potentially valuable to the person who's producing the energy, because they're such a major consumer, that they could actually make a margin on top, and they could get paid to cut their consumption off. So essentially it's basically energy arbitrage, right? Except that it's more, rather than like some temporary arbitrage opportunity, it's kind of like a structural arbitrage. But it's not just the miner who is able to benefit. That's what's kind of most interesting about this, is it's kind of a two-way insurance contract. It's insurance both for the energy producer, but then it's also insurance for the miner. Like, they can actually, essentially, they can offer the consumption, the insurance of a dedicated buyer of energy to the energy producer, and get paid both for mining the Bitcoin, but then also for selling the insurance of always being there to purchase when there is nobody to purchase the energy production. So look at it from the producer, from the energy producer's perspective. So they often, especially when we're talking about renewables, just because they're the prime example, they have so much curtailed energy in solar and wind, because it's completely, its production cannot be ramped up or ramped down in response to customers at all. It's just, you just stick it out there and you hope it produces when you need it. Because of that, it's kind of the prime example. But from the context of, you know, let's say it produces 10x during peak, and then, you know, just 10% of the total during during peak production hours, I mean, and then it's just 10% during total during the peak consumption hours. Well, when you have no buyer, yes, it's great just by itself to have a buyer of last resort come in, but what it actually does, though, is it requires you to need that much more energy production even during the peak times. So as just a normal miner on the electrical grid, you're a static consumption. But the fact that your service is specifically interruptible, that they can profitably cut it off, and or that they can cut it off without actually disrupting the service that it's providing, without actually losing the ultimate buyer of the hashes. You know, like going back to the context of Netflix, is if you cut off your servers to, you know, to a streaming service or something, you suddenly can't sell the service anymore. And I don't mean in the sense that, like, when you cut it off, like, you just lose your customers, your market goes away, and the fact that you can spin your servers back up is kind of irrelevant. Whereas in Bitcoin, Bitcoin is always paying for hashes. It never goes away. It doesn't have downtime. It's just always a buyer, regardless of when the hash is produced. So going back to the context of, like, wind and solar is, you know, during peak solar is, like, what, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something, and then peak demand is, like, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. So peak production is at 2 o'clock. If, let's say, you have to curtail 80% of it, well, rather than just, you know, turning it into the ground, you can sell it to a miner that needs that rather large amount of energy production. However, when you reach the point of peak demand, you still have to satisfy that massive customer, and you have to do it basically on the margin from the energy that you would have had to curtail previously. So what you can do is actually trade that off. You can sell the curtailed energy to the buyer at a much better than market rate to the miner, because obviously it would have been thrown away before, and make a profit, but then turn back around and share some of that profit back with them during peak demand hours to lower the consumption of energy, to have them turn their machines off. And what you've done is you've arbitraged your consumption wave, right? Is you've moved consumption to the trough, to the point where demand is usually very low and production massively outweighs it, and you've moved it away from the area where it's high, and so that your consumption is actually incentivized. You actually subsidize your own consumption to migrate towards where your production is, because miners can be this huge buffer or kind of reallocator zone of essentially consumption demand. And if you want to dig much deeper into this idea, like, this is a very, very simplistic, you know, summary of kind of how it works. But if you want to get into like dirty details, highly recommend The Brain's. He actually links to it, I think, and mentions it in this article, Zach does. The Brain's blog. It's like Bitcoin and mining, or Bitcoin and the grid, or something. Parts 1, 2, and 3, if I'm not mistaken. I've only read part 1 and 2. Part 1 is the only one that's actually recorded. So, part 2, I think, is like partially done. I intend to have it out actually for you guys. But I'll link to part 1 if you want to dig into it. It's a fascinating topic. I mean, we've covered it. There's numerous pieces that have covered it in kind of various different angles and perspectives, but that's probably the one that has the grittiest of the details, so to speak. But with that, just don't forget to check out the show notes. We'll have our amazing sponsors in there as well: Swan Bitcoin, CoinKite, and Fold. These are all highly, I cannot recommend them enough. They're all products and services that are basically at the very center of everything that I do in Bitcoin. And you guys get special discounts just for listening to the show. Check them out. And don't forget to check out the links to a couple of different things, actually, for diving deeper into this topic. And we will have a big week coming next week. Don't forget to check out Maximalism Shitcoin Insider Episode 8. A lot of great feedback on that one. So if you haven't listened to it, it's a good one, and it will not be in the Bitcoin Audible feed. So link to that one as well. You know what? Why not? Why not? Stick it in the show notes. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. I am Guy Swan, the guy who's listened to more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. Going to have a crazy, crazy wild ride for the next few years. So I hope you take this ride with me, because I will be here reading everything there is to know about Bitcoin. Until then, everybody, thank you so much for listening, and take it easy.
You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.